This is episode 302 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers and co-starring on this show, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
I am so stoked to be doing this show with the 5 pounds lighter, faster than ever, 2020 best voice in the business, breakout candidate, future Hall of Famer in the Broadcasting Hall of Fame, Brandon Schultz. This is awesome. I'm stoked to be here.
I appreciate you pumping me up like that because I am co-starring with you, and really all the accolades you just heaped upon me. I mean, it doesn't even hold the candle to what I've just been seeing from you over these last 2 weeks. What people can't see behind the microphone is Adam just grinding away, and every little thing, every piece of information, nothing gets past Adam Emmert. So everything that you hear on this show is going to be gold coming from Adam.
I'm the first one into my podcast studio. I'm the last one out of my podcast studio, doing all the work, no stone left unturned. And I can't wait to unleash this new version of our podcast on the people here for this upcoming season.
They aren't going to know what hit them.
Everybody said we need to bring in one more, right? One more guy. But I don't think we do. I think we can grow in-house and be just fine.
And in fact, maybe even be better. Maybe the best version of this show that we've ever seen from this show.
If you're not the voice of Seahawks podcasts in this country by the end of this season, if you're not recognized in that way, if you don't get one vote for that this year, it's a conspiracy. And look, and it's that way for everything Seahawks related, right? Like, this is what we're seeing now that it is officially the silliest of the silly season time, with training camp going on, and you get the hype of every player in the organization, every coach. And it's interesting to sift through. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And I want to get to some of those players that we're seeing a lot of the hype from, but I wonder if it's worse this year because we don't have preseason games. So there's nothing to break up the hype train that once it started from the start of preseason, there's nothing to slow it down because everything that's coming out, it's all basically from the team. And even, I think, to a certain extent, I don't think we're going to get beat reporters saying, well, this guy looks like he sucks.
Right. And that's how it always is, right? With, you know, the team media that's there at practice. Yes, they are not team employees and all that, but they are people who live in that city. And they do cover that team, and they have to keep those relationships up to get the stories that they want to publish later on. And so I understand that that's the way that that works. But I think you're 100% right when it comes to the whole preseason thing. Without those games to break up the hype train, it has reached epic levels this year. It's been really interesting to watch.
The players and the hype are very disproportionate, but we're going to get to that. I want to talk a little bit about the mock game that happened over the weekend for the Seahawks. Talk a little bit of news as well. I think we can just get out the most disappointing piece of news, I think, from the last time we talked, Adam. And that's Everson Griffin, who a guy that I think a lot of Seahawks fans were looking at and saying, man, if you could just add a guy, you know, we've obviously been talking about Jadeveon Clowney all offseason. Mm-hmm. And Everson Griffin is a guy of that. He's in that tier, and he goes to the Cowboys for $6 million on a 1-year deal.
Right. You feel like that was a deal that was in the Seahawks wheelhouse, right?
Right.
And maybe the thing is that Everson Griffin just really didn't have any interest in coming to Seattle. I mean, that can be part of the reason, right? We always assume that every player is willing to go anywhere at any time, but when you're a free agent, you can make those choices. And for some reason that I cannot understand, the Dallas Cowboys seems to be one of those teams that players want to go to. Maybe it's the endless losing. Maybe it's the fact that the media overhypes you. Maybe you get like a little extra in endorsements and that sort of thing. But players seem to go down there, and the Seahawks miss out on Griffin. But I mean, no matter, Bruce Irvin is unblockable.
You know, I could buy the whole idea of, well, maybe that's just where he wanted to go. I mean, he is named after Everson Walls, the Cowboys cornerback. So there is a little bit of a tie to Dallas there. But you can't tell me that when a team is offering $6 million, that if Seattle were to offer $7 million and to come back and play for a guy that coached him in college, Pete Carroll, coaching Everson Griffin at USC. An extra million couldn't have got him to move to the Pacific Northwest rather than Dallas.
Hey, people are motivated by different things, man. I mean, when you've made money already in your career, like a million here or there, you know, it's not exactly something that you maybe it's not something that really affects your decisions one way or the other.
I can't help but think that this was a huge whiff along the lines of, you know, not giving up more than a seventh round pick for Jarrell Casey.
Or going out and bringing in Calais Campbell.
Yeah.
For a sixth or whatever it was. The Ravens.
Yeah, it was a fifth for the Ravens, I think. Or maybe it was a sixth. And we thought, yeah, why couldn't you do a fifth?
It was something low. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to get more into the defensive line. This show is going to be about our season expectations. Every year about this time, Adam, we kind of kick off the season with what we expect to see from our Seahawks in the coming year. And this is going to be a little bit different because this is a little bit different year. I think there's a lot that we can't project because it is going to be a very different season. And one of the things that stood out because of that is with this mock game that happened over this past weekend. A couple of weeks back, it sounded like the team was going to broadcast these mock games, and then all of a sudden everything kind of clamped down in terms of information. And, you know, maybe it was one team deciding that they wanted to kind of hold up back a bunch of information, and then everybody else just seemingly followed along, and they just don't want to give anything up going into week one. So into this mock game, which ended up only playing about a little bit less than a half of football because Brandon Jackson went down due to injury and actually got knocked out in the game. So there's a lot that we're not going to see going into this season.
Yeah, we're not going to have a ton of information as to how you think the Seahawks are going to play, especially offensively. And I think that's really where you're seeing this kind of clamp down on information, because this is kind of the year that Brian Schottenheimer needs to come out and show his creativity. We're all there now, right? And I think even Coach Pete Carroll is there now in terms of, all right, yes, let's still run the ball, be physical, all that stuff. But also a little bit of that whole let Russ cook thing. And with the idea that these are probably the best overall group of weapons that Russ has ever had, you know, in his arsenal.
Wait. You're telling me that Pete Carroll is actually getting on board the let Russ cook train? Because that's not what I heard from him. I hear he is team hammer the rock.
We're just going to hammer the rock. That's all we're doing around here. We're hammering the rock.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about Coach Carroll is he's really good at the sarcasm. And some people don't quite pick up on it all the time. But there, I know that the whole team is there in philosophy. And when you have a quarterback like Russ hitting the prime of his career right now with those kind of weapons, you saw this whole offseason, the way they built the team. They were all in on offense. We talked about what was the philosophy of this offseason all this entire time, right? As they've been bringing in free agents and stuff. And it's been offensive centric. They're going to go out and try to score points this year. I mean, that's why when people made a big deal of Russ coming out in the media a couple of weeks back and being like, yeah, why don't we play every quarter like the fourth quarter? Everybody's like, oh, he's taking shots at Pete. This, that, other thing. No. He's not
you
taking shots at no one.
You don't think that these two are on the same page throughout the offseason? You think that there's actually like something brewing between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson? If you think that if they're sending messages to one another through the media versus talking to one another in the building, then that's just not the way how it works between these two.
It never has. I mean, that if you think that that's exactly what's happening, then you haven't been paying attention to Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll the whole time that they have been partners in football life, right?
Right.
Like they don't air out their grievances like that. They just don't. They keep it in house. And I don't even know how much there are in grievances, right? It's not like that these guys are butting heads all the time. I think they work together pretty damn well. So when you hear Pete kind of hint around at it, you hear Russ hitting around at it, you see the offseason moves in terms of personnel, it makes me believe that that's the reason why they've been a little more secretive about these mock games and stuff, because I think Schottenheimer is going to come out and kind of unleash some creativity, especially in the passing game.
So couching this in terms of our season expectations, I don't think that Russell Wilson's going to throw for 5,000 plus yards this season.
No,
it might be up toward the most that we've seen from him. I think the most is probably that year where I think what it was around 4,200, 4,300, where he was actually injured right in that first game of the season with the Dolphins. So he couldn't really run around a whole bunch. And that ended up being his most prolific season in terms of yards, but probably his least prolific in terms of passer rating in the season because he just couldn't be himself.
Right.
But I could see him getting up there above the, you know, near the 4,500 yard mark for Russ this year.
Yeah, so
it's not going to be the shift that I think people like are really clamoring for, but it's going to be a shift.
Right. Yards don't matter. So I don't know where he's going to come in terms of passing yards.
Yeah.
But I would guess that in passing attempts, those are going to increase. And just like you said, not by some sort of we're not suddenly going to be running the no huddle, right? And going run and shoot. You know, if you go back to like the 90s and just, you know, throw the ball. That's here. It's setting up everything. You throw the ball to set up the run, all that. It's not going to be that. It's still going to be run the ball to set up the pass and all that. It's just that on first and second down, you'll probably see an increase in throwing by like 30%. So not this enormous, huge difference where everybody's like, well, just let Russ cook. Well, yeah, okay. We'll let him throw the ball a little bit more because he's our best chance to win. But we're not abandoning the whole philosophy of ball that Pete Carroll has had his entire life. It's not happening.
Yeah, and it's just not happening because it's Pete Carroll.
It's Pete Carroll. And
look, he still coaches the team.
Look at the personnel moves, right? I think bringing in all the different offensive linemen, I think, was a big marker to, hey, we need to be better there. And this is the best way we can go about it. So they go and they, you know, spend a lot of time bringing in a bunch of different dudes. They bring in guys like Greg Olsen. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's probably the biggest offseason signing in terms of the offense.
Yeah,
because of all of the things that you can now do with Disley and Olsen out there on the field, running out of that, what they call that 12 personnel, is that right? You know, right. Just two receivers, two tight ends, one back. I think that you could have so much diversity that comes out of that formation alone in the running and passing game, that's the type of thing that they're trying to keep under wraps a little bit. I don't know that, you know, Philip Dorsett's going to be the guy that really like makes everything really different for the Seahawks. I don't know that you're going to see a crap ton of 3-4 wide. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah. And I don't think their personnel is necessarily lining up for, especially 4 wide. We'll see it every now and then, but I don't think that's a formation that they generally run a lot of anyway, but that's probably what most people want to know. You know, day in, day out, they want to know what those formations are and wanting to know coming out of the mock game, you know, how often are we seeing Greg Olsen and another tight end on the field? I don't know if Disley made it on the field at all for this, but it is encouraging that he is actually back. And it was cool to kind of hear him in the press conference talking about him making it back, hearing from the team that, you know, able to fight through that Achilles injury and make it back in time for training camp. That's pretty impressive.
Oh, it is impressive. I mean, it's the greatest recovery in the history of Achilles tears recoveries. You know, and after this, he's probably so much faster because of the extra rehab that he put in. And it's, you know, being a little superhuman, being from Montana, right? Like, right. There's that mixed in there that he might challenge Philip Dorsett in the area of being able to actually bend space time with your speed.
Yes, Will Disley, he never missed a fraction of a second of his offseason rehab work. And it's something that really nobody in the history of football has ever done before.
But I think in all seriousness, if you're going to talk about Uncle Will a little bit here, bad knee injury, came back, looked the same, right? Then he tears the Achilles and you're like, oh, man, that's even a gnarlier injury than, you know, one of the CLs in your knees.
Yeah.
And you have seen players in both basketball and football over the past 2-3 years actually come back from the Achilles thing way better than they ever used to be able to. So I would expect that Uncle Will could perform at the kind of level he did before the injury. It might not be exactly the same, but pretty damn close.
And I don't know if it matters a ton for tight end, but we can look toward Richard Sherman, a guy who went through that Achilles injury, and that's a guy who relies on speed
and is an older player.
And I think the steps that we've kind of seen Sherman lose isn't necessarily, I'm sure the Achilles injury contributed to, but he's kind of getting to that point in his cornerback career where he's losing a little bit of a step anyway. So I don't think you can necessarily point to that other than to point out that he recovered from it and maintained his Pro Bowl caliber self.
Absolutely. And Will's game was never based on speed. Like, no. that's not who he is, right? Whereas, like you said, with Sherman being on the outside and all that, you have to have some speed at the very least. And Sherman's game really as a corner was based lesser on speed than it was technique and, you know, the mental game and things of that nature. So yeah, when he does lose that half a step, it is a little bit more noticeable as compared to, like, say, like Daryl Green back in the day, right? Who played for 96 years and always was like the third fastest dude in the NFL.
Yeah, forever. Yeah.
When he lost two steps, didn't matter. He was still the fastest dude on the team. He just wasn't like a blur. Right. So yeah, you notice it with Sherman. But like I said, with Disley, I don't think that that's going to be something that really is a inhibitor of his game. I really like the idea of the two tight end sets with him and Olsen out there. I think they can be very multiple out of that.
The tight ends are exciting. The wide receivers with Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf are pretty exciting. Lockett coming out of the mock game, still Russell Wilson's favorite target, getting four receptions. He found Metcalf in the end zone for a touchdown. And the running back group has a little bit more depth with Carlos Hyde in the mix. And that's the big addition in the offseason because we always see so many injuries. What are you? Who's the guy that you're excited out of the wide receiver running back group?
Honestly, it's probably Chris Carson. And I know that's a really boring answer, but I'm the most excited for him because of the attitude and style that he brings. And if we are chucking the rock around just a little bit more, that opens things up for him. If he can just hold on to the ball, like, that's it. That's all I want to see out of him, right? Just be you, but hold on to the ball. I think that's probably the most exciting guy to me. I think that's the guy that can really keep this offense on schedule and allow Russ to be throwing in situations that's second and six instead of second and 12, right? There's a huge difference there.
Well, he'll be throwing on second and six because he'll throw a 4-yard pass on first down to get him ahead of the sticks. So
that's cute. It's cute you think that. How about you? I mean, I know everybody is talking about the wide receivers, and my guess would be, if I had to guess, Based on if you were like most people, the guy that you're most excited about rhymes with Shmemke Mepshnev.
He is the guy that I'm most excited about just because of his potential. But I also think that Tyler Lockett is still going to continue to be Russell Wilson's guy. He'll be the third down guy. He'll be kind of the first guy that Russ is looking for in big situations, because he's not a guy that drops the football. We've seen drops from DK in the past. I think he has the potential to get better at that. He recognized it and talking in the press conference that's an area where he needs to get better at. But really, his game is getting downfield, making the contested catch. That's something that we have seen from Tyler that he's able to do too. But if I'm going to try and pick between the two as to which one ends, and I know you said yards don't matter, but if we're looking at yards in terms of, well, let's just say catches then between these two guys, which one gets more catches? Yep. It's going to be Lockett that gets more catches and probably going to get more yards too.
Well, yeah. I mean, and not only that, but the scheme is going to be set up in a way to where Tyler is the guy that they're really going to be looking for. I mean, he's the number one on the team. I understand the hype around DK, and I am excited about what he can do this year.
I'm hyped about him too.
you brought up the hands thing, right? And look, let's be realistic about DK Metcalf. He is never going to be a guy who's a natural catcher of the football, right? He's not ever going to be a Chris Carter, Randy Moss kind of receiver, right? That you saw him and you were like, wow, the ball never hits the ground. That doesn't mean he can't be a great receiver. Let's take, I don't know, say Terrell Owens, one of the best receivers to ever suit up. Not great hands. That was not his game.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's been a bunch of very great receivers that being a supernatural catcher of the football wasn't their deal. And that's DK. And that's okay, because he can still go out there and stack DBs and, you know, out physical guys and, you know, get those inside slants. He really can. And again, this Brett Coleman on YouTube did a great film analysis when he was drafted about what his potential is. And he talked about Calvin Johnson. Everybody compares him to Julio, which I don't get at all. But Calvin Johnson, I totally understand that. It's that same physical specimen that can go out there and just dominate that way, mm-hmm. basically running two routes. And I think DK can run more than two routes. And he's looking good in his change of direction and, you know, just polishing up those routes, as well as, you know, being mindful of his hands and trying to be a better catcher of the football. He can still be that high level receiver that everybody's hoping for, but, you know, he's not going to be Chris Carter. Just relax on that.
Well, and the thing with DK is, too, he can be that guy who tilts the field for Seattle, the guy that the defense has to respect the most, maybe because he has the most potential to really burn you down the field and score quickly. But that is going to then open it up for Tyler Lockett a little bit more underneath and maybe some of the big plays over the top eventually, too. So I think that's where his best potential is tilting the field a little bit more to his side.
Yeah, he's going to demand more attention this year. He's not going to sneak up on the league like he did last year. No. I mean, everybody.
He was a guy in the Arizona game that we saw Patrick Peterson trailing.
Yeah, yeah. And you kind of have to do that. You need that bigger physical corner to even have a chance against a guy like DK. And let's talk about Dorsett a little bit here. Like, I do think that he is a nice addition to the receiving corps. Now, let's be clear. Philip Dorsett never figured it out with Andrew Luck, and he never really figured it out with Tom Brady. So what makes you think he's going to come to Seattle and just suddenly figure it out with Russell Wilson? I don't think that's the case, but you do have to respect his speed. Mm-hmm. And when you have that third burner, that really opens things up for DK and Tyler, right? Like, that stresses a defense in so many different ways. Just his presence out there, I think, makes a big difference in the passing game this year.
I think where we're probably going to get frustrated with him is we're going to see him open on occasions where Russ gets him the ball and he can't come down with it. That's where I'm thinking.
When it comes to the holes in Dorsett's game, it's less his hands. He catches the ball fine. The problem is he's not where he's supposed to be often, right? He's ad-libbing a lot. Now, that does not work with Tom Brady. Right. Yeah, he ain't having that, right? And that was one of the big problems with him in New England. Now, does that work better with Russ? Maybe. I mean, with all the scribble plays and that sort of thing, and just a scramble drill, maybe that fits in with Dorsett's game a little bit more. But he's not good. You're going to see him break the plan on any given play way too often. That's going to be the biggest frustration, I think, with Dorsett.
Well, moving on to the offensive line, we got a little bit of a picture of the offensive line. The Seahawks put out a 16-second video of the DK Metcalf touchdown on the opening drive. And so we saw Dwayne Brown on the left side, Mikey Potty. At center, we saw Ethan Posick. And then we saw the rookie Damian Lewis at right guard and Brandon Schell at right tackle. So I'm glad that they put that out so we could at least get an idea of who the starters were in this opening mock game.
Okay, before we address the offensive line real quick, I want to talk about that little touchdown in the mock game.
Okay.
And every other highlight from camp that we've seen of DK catching touchdowns. You know what my biggest takeaway from that is? Stop trying to cover him with Nico Thorpe. Okay? Because he scores on him every time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's part of that hype thing, right? It's like, well, great. Yeah, DK's torching Nico Thorpe every time. It's
the number four corner on our team.
They might not even make the roster when it's all said and done. So
let's, he led the team out of the tunnel. He's going to be the special teams captain once again, Adam.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just saying, maybe not the greatest cover corner. Just going out on a limb there. But as far as the offensive line goes, it's interesting. They do seem to have settled on Schell and Lewis at the right tackle, right guard position, right?
Yeah.
And then obviously we know Ayupati and Brown are going to be the left tackle and left guard.
It's not so obvious. I think there is some potential competition for Ayupati considering his, I don't know. He played 15 games last year. Maybe we don't have to worry about his durability so much. I guess I just remember him closing the season being injured and that's that's where my memory goes.
Right, right. I would just say it's more likely that Upati's the guy, right?
Yeah.
But center, right? That seems to be where they're having the biggest amount of indecision, which is odd to me because how much Posick do you really need to see? I mean, you've had him on your team for what, 3 years now?
This is his fourth season with the team. It's the last year on his rookie deal. He is the most tenured Seattle Seahawks offensive lineman right now.
And you don't know if he should start yet? How bad is BJ Finney?
It's a little
bit. Is it his swampy butt? Is that what the problem is? Ethan is it Posick, just too swampy?
Ethan Posick has a lower SAW score.
Yeah.
That could factor in. You don't know.
That could factor in. Yeah.
If you're Russell Wilson, that has to factor in.
Yeah. I don't know. I would hope that they make a decision on this sooner rather than later. But with that said, I am very perplexed that it hasn't been made already, because you should already know what you have in Ethan. And you should be playing a lot of Finney out there to see what you got. But it seems to be the other way around, where they don't really want to see a lot of Finney, and they're looking at Posick and being like, are you the guy? Still not sure.
I wonder, with the limited amount of offseason, if the fact that Posick's been in the system longer, if they just came into camp saying, okay, this is essentially, Posick, this is your job to lose. Go out there, and if you can hold on to it, then you can keep it, because you're going to know this offense a lot more than a guy like Finney. And hey, maybe you come to find out that when Finney came into camp that he didn't study up as much as he needed to, really, for the center spot for Russell Wilson to be comfortable with. So now, if that's the case, I don't know if you necessarily give up Joey Hunt, who ended up signing on with the Colts here this past weekend. But I guess you hold on to the fact that maybe Justin Britt's still out there, and once he's recovered from injury, maybe you can reunite him with Russell Wilson.
Ooh, I hadn't even thought about that possibility, but yeah, that could be it. That would be, out of all the former Seahawks that are out on the market right now, that
that's Britt the most intriguing one to you right now.
That's the most intriguing one to me right now. But yeah, as we get into expectations for the season here, I'll talk a little bit more offensive line, but I am more positive about this year's unit than I have been about, you know, any unit in the last probably 3-4 years.
That right side, though, is concerning to me.
Oh, it's the opposite to me.
Really?
Yeah.
You're super stoked about Damian Lewis and Brandon Shell?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just
Do we want to break this down now? Because here, I'll tell you real quick. Can Brandon Shell be as good as a Fetty with a couple less penalties? Is that in the realm of possibility?
I feel like he probably can't be worse than a Fetty.
There we go. Right. So right there, automatically, without question, Shell is an upgrade over her Fetty. Okay. Like, I think we can all agree on that, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And then you've got a guy in Lewis who has come in, and by all accounts, and I think out of all the guys that have been hyped this offseason here and through training camp, he was the one I was most excited to hear about from people like Dwayne Brown.
Sure.
I mean, he's not a bullshit fish. That's not who Dwayne Brown is. And so for him to come out and be like, he's a baller. Like, this guy can play. He's a mauler. He's a guy that can really go in and push people around. He is absolutely, without question, a younger version of Fluke. If you look at that right there, you've already upgraded then. The right side of the line is better today than it was at the end of the season last year.
Well, then in that case, I don't see how Ethan Posick can't be an upgrade over Joey Hunt.
And that's the thing. So you look at the left side of the line, right? And you're like, I feel good about that. You know, even though Upati's getting a little older.
They're like, both getting a little older, as long as they can stay healthy.
I like that they brought in as much depth as they did. So even if we do suffer an injury here or there, I think we have guys that come in and hold their own. But when it comes to the center position, the fact that Joey Hunt came in last year, just dreadfully undersized to be the full-time starter as your center, and really actually hold up pretty damn well.
Yeah.
That leads me to believe that you can put about anybody in there and they can survive and do just fine. And so I think, yes, Posick will be every bit as good as Joey Hunt, but I think he can be a tiny bit better just because he's got a little bit size on him. He can actually match it.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to overhype it, right? But like, I think he has the extra size and strength to hold up against some of those bull rushes that Joey Hunt just flat couldn't.
I'm optimistic on Posick.
And also too, like, going into this offseason, I don't know for how many years have I been kind of asking for this approach towards building the offensive line. Just bring in a crap ton of dudes and see who can play. And that's kind of what they did.
Yeah.
And so I kind of need to double down on the idea that this will work out in the end. Plus, Noah Fetty. Did I mention the Noah Fetty part?
Yeah. And in fact, I guess that's one of the things that we heard from Pete Carroll here this last week is that there's so much competition on the offensive line. He's having a hard time deciding. Well, Pete, you need to decide. We're 3 weeks away from actual football.
Yeah.
How crazy is it that how quickly this game against the Falcons is coming up?
It's crazy, but it's also awesome. I can't wait for it to get here. Hurry up, please. I need football in my life. Like, I mean, NBA coming back helped a little bit, right?
Uh-huh.
It helped a little bit, but it's not the same. And I don't care. I don't care if there's one fan, zero fans, a million fans in the stadium. Don't give two craps. I've never watched football for the fans in the stands. I've watched it for the players on the field, and I cannot wait for some ball, man.
Yeah.
Because we'd have at least a little by now, usually, right? Like, we'd have some preseason games.
More than 16 seconds of a DK Metcalf highlight touchdown.
You mean a Nico Thorpe fail?
A Nico Thorpe fail. But we also got to see the Nico Thorpe running out of the tunnel. I thought those were the two videos that the Seahawks put out through their social media that we got to see from the mock game.
Hooray.
He did great. He didn't fall down coming out of the tunnel. So
head high.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with some energy. Nico's great out of the tunnel, man. Like, he's got his out of the tunnel skills might be the best in the game.
It's without question. I mean, they should if they have an all pro for dudes who run out of the tunnel, mm-hmm. Nico Thorpe would be like an 8-time. And I don't even think he's been in the league 8 years, but he would be an 8-time all pro.
Yeah, because they would have given him the all pro nod like a couple years before he entered the league, just out of respect for what was coming, you know, like just recognizing his out of the tunnel game greatness early. That's how that would go. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. They need that award. They need to start tracking pancakes for offensive linemen, pancake blocks.
If I had to choose between the two, I would take the pancake blocks. I want that as a stat.
We'd almost always choose pancakes over a lot of things. There's no doubt about it, except for waffles. I would definitely choose waffles over the pancakes.
Waffles are superior to pancakes.
I wish they...
And I don't think that's a food hot take. I think that's just the way it is.
Yeah, it is the way it is. Can we just change the idea of a offensive lineman smushing a D lineman, change it from a pancake to a waffle? Because they actually like crush the waffle in the little waffle iron, right? Like, that sounds tougher rather than frying it up in a pan. Like, you actually smash it.
That's a really good point.
Let's call them waffles.
Maybe pancakes isn't the right word for it.
Mm-mm, it's waffles.
Which one of our defensive linemen is going to get waffled the most in 2020?
Brandon Jackson's off to a quick start in that.
Yikes.
That's not good. I don't want to make fun of a guy like, you know, losing consciousness on the field and having to go to the hospital. That's some serious stuff. But does that not also make you worry a bit more in terms of the fact that a guy who could be key rotationally, right, to that defensive line goes down and there are zero signings?
You know why they're doing it. You know why there's zero signings, Adam. It's because Jadeveon Clowney's out there and he just needs a couple more weeks before he's coming into the building and playing on the Seahawks defensive line. We know it's happening. It hasn't quite got here yet.
Man, I'd love to believe in that, but this is what it's looking like to me. And I could be dead wrong about this, but this is what my gut's telling me regarding Clowney. That he's decided that if he's going to play in this COVID season, then it's worth 15 to 17 million minimum. Like, that's what it's going to take to get him through the door. And if nobody's willing to pony that up, whatever, I'll just opt out for the year.
Sure.
I think that's where his head's at.
That could be. Get healthy.
He's already healthy.
Really healthy. Extra, extra healthy.
I don't know that Clowney's the type of guy that is in love with the game, right? Mm-hmm. It's always kind of felt that way. I mean, not just his time here in Seattle, but as a Texan, and you kind of heard that. And that's okay. I mean, he's talented enough to where he doesn't have to, you know, be in love with the game. But, you know, I think he could look at it and be like, if I don't get the money I want, screw it. I don't want to deal with the COVID season. I'm out.
You know, I also think that Jackson could be on the outside of the edge rushing group because you've got Bruce Irvin, you got Rasheem Green, Daryl Taylor, who, I mean, he's injured right now, but he's a guy that, you know, hopefully he's not too far off. Benson Mayowa, who you signed in the offseason, LJ Collier, Alton Robinson, and you can throw Shaquem Griffin in there. I feel like with the amount of depth there, that maybe they're just good with carrying Jackson until they really have somebody like Clowney, or I don't know if they end up going out to get Clay, but somebody else that where you see a significant improvement over.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of feel like the only guy that maybe they might bring in at this point would be Clay, which whoop-de-doo. It is interesting, though, because it does feel like that they honestly believe in the guys that they have in-house already. I don't know that they're really panicked about the idea of adding another guy to help the pass rush. I genuinely believe that they feel that with Bruce and with the way Mayoa's looked supposedly in practice up to this point, that they feel like they made the additions that they needed to make. Sprinkle in a little Jamal Adams and the emergence of either Green, Collier, unlikely Taylor at this point, or Robinson. And all of a sudden you got that mix of guys and you're banking on the idea that Reed is going to live up to that contract, right? Yeah. That last year was the anomaly and the year before was the real Jaren Reed. I think that's what they're banking on. And I think they actually feel good about it. And this might be just what we're living with.
You know, I went back and looked at just how different the pass rush was going back to 2018 versus last year with 2019. And because 2018 really was a pretty prolific year for the defensive line, they had 174 pressures on the defensive line, 40 sacks, which I think 40 sacks feels like that number. It's kind of like the magic number that you're kind of going for as a defensive line. Okay. That's the one we've usually talked about over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I looked at the top five guys from that 2018 season. Frank Clark and Jaren Reed were far and away the two guys giving the Seahawks the most pressures. You had 48 from Frank Clark with 13 sacks, and then you had 31 from Jaren Reed, 10 and a half sacks. So almost 80 pressures between those two players with that going up to that 174 number. And then you had Quentin Jefferson with 23, Jacob Martin with 13, and Deion Jordan with 13. And I kind of feel like your good depth guys are giving you anywhere from 13 to 17 on any given year, which that doesn't sound like a big number, but that's what kind of allows you to get up toward the top of the league. And in 2019, they were at 128 pressures, and they were in the bottom five of the league in terms of their pass rush. Signing Jadeveon Clowney did not get them up to that Frank Clark level where, you know, he had 30 pressures, whereas Frank was up near 50. And when you go out and spend big on one player like that, I think they were of the opinion that he was going to replace that production of Frank Clark, and he didn't.
I don't know. I don't know that anybody would look at Clowney as a player and Frank Clark as a player and really think that those games are comparable. They're very different players in terms of how they affect the game. I mean, Clowney's never been an elite sack guy in terms of numbers, right? No. I mean, he's a guy who's just freaking disruptive. And he messes up so many plays that maybe don't show up on a stat sheet. Now, what I would hope is that he really didn't have that that second guy to really help him out and actually clean up the mess that he started, right? Like, he'd mess up the play and you didn't have that guy to kind of, you know, the J.J. Watt of the world or somebody like that come in and, you know, kind of scoop up the sacks.
Yeah.
And I think this year, if they were to bring in Clowney again, I mean, I think Bruce Irvin can be that guy who kind of cleans up the mess.
Maybe Mayowa could even be that guy who cleans up the mess. But, you know, looking at last season, your top five guys were Clowney, 30 pressures. Jaren Reed only had 13, so a drop from 31 down to 13. And part of that was he missed the first six games of the season.
Yeah, I was going to say he missed about half the freaking season.
But still, when he returned, it wasn't on that same level of production that he was when he was paired with Frank Clark. But, you know, maybe with a full season, he can get up to that level. Quentin Jefferson.
So he would have had probably at the end of the year, if he had had a full season, he probably would have been around 23 pressures, 24.
Yeah, maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
In comparison to 30, pretty damn close. I'm going to say it was about the same performance.
Yeah, I figured if you averaged the two season based on his number of games, it would be around 22 pressures, 6.5 sacks, which from the defensive tackle spot, I think that's okay.
That'd be great. I would definitely take that out of Jaren Reed this year.
But going back to 2019, so your two top guys were Jadeveon Clowney and Quentin Jefferson in terms of pressures, but Jefferson dropped off big time from 2018 to 2019. Not big time, but he dropped off 7 pressures. He was dropped from 23 down to 16. He picked up a half a sack. And then your other two guys were Rasheem Green, who had 15 pressures, and Ziggy Ansah, who had 10. So Quentin Jefferson, one thing that stood out to me, because the defensive line isn't all about sacks, it's mm-hmm. also about tackling in the run game. And we saw run game being a big issue. Quentin Jefferson last year, his tackling efficiency was really poor. And so I could see that being a reason why the Seahawks just weren't willing to give him the same type of deal that the Bills were.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Quentin Jefferson always felt like one of those rotational guys, right? Not a guy that you're going to pay that sort of big contract to as a core piece of your defense. And so the Seahawks were never going to do that. And that's okay, because they have spent a crap ton of draft capital on defense over the past few years. I mean, you think about LJ Collier and you think about Taylor this year and even Robinson and Green. Look, there are young guys that need to step up, and you have to be able to build from within and through the draft to have a chance to really compete year in and year out for Super Bowls, right? You can't always go out there and get that premier pass rusher in free agency. Like, you need to be able to identify and spot talent and bring him in. Now, I'm really, really concerned and bummed out about the reports about Taylor, right?
So yeah. He's not even running yet.
Yeah, with the rod in your leg, right? And I read one article about it, and basically it's kind of a race against time as to you heal up before that rod becomes faulty. Mm. Like, it only lasts so long while it's in your leg. And he's already way behind schedule on that. And so that means that they would have to open it up again, do the whole thing over. Mm. Right now, if I had a gun to my head and I had to place a bet on whether Taylor plays or doesn't play this year, I would absolutely take doesn't play this year.
It feels that way to me too, but he's also a guy who he did play injured a lot last season. So you do wonder if he could fight through that a little bit. But I'm not expecting, even if he does play this year, I'm actually expecting a little bit more out of Alton Robinson than I am Daryl Taylor.
I told you on draft day, or I guess it'd be day 3 of the draft, right? When they brought in Robinson, I went back and I looked at Taylor's stuff and Robinson's stuff and all that. I told you I was more excited about Robinson. I told you I thought I liked his potential better than Taylor's. People told me I was crazy and that I was, you know, just poo-pooing Taylor for like no reason. And that wasn't the idea. The idea was I really like Robinson's game. It looks like an NFL type player. Now, he wasn't quite as consistent at Syracuse, but what did he have around him?
Right.
Like, there's that as well. I think he can be an instant contributor. I think LJ Collier's second year, look, man, it can't be worse. We know that. And I still believe in the guy that they drafted. I liked what he did at TCU that final year.
Yeah.
I think he can really play.
I don't think he's going to be a pass rush guy, though.
He can do it. I mean, it's just he's more of a bull rusher than a speed guy. That's one thing that everybody falls in love with. They fall in love with the guy with the great bend, the big get off, and has the one move, right? The swim around.
Yeah.
And that's it. There's a lot of other ways to get after the quarterback. And a lot of people kind of miss out on guys who set up some of the spin moves and bull rushes and things like that to get after the quarterback, because it's not as flashy. It's not Von Miller shot out of a cannon all of a sudden quarterback down.
And I don't think I'm counting on him being one of the top 5 guys either. And I don't think the Seahawks are necessarily counting on him to be a top 5. Because that's what I did. When I looked at 2018, 2019, I looked at the top 5. And the difference was...
In terms of sacks or pressures?
For sacks and pressures.
Okay.
And in the top 5 in 2018 accounted for 128 pressures, which was...
Two-thirds?
Exactly the amount of the entire team in 2019.
Yeah, there's that.
So, yeah, not good. And they got, with those top 5 guys, they got 31 sacks, which was 4 more than the entire 2019 defense.
Right. So, when you look at this roster, and I don't have it pulled up, so this is going to be a fun game.
Okay.
On the defensive line, who are your top 5 this year in terms of pressures and sacks? Or do you just want to talk pressures? I don't know. Whatever you want.
Yeah, I went and looked at the top five just on the numbers from just last season.
Okay.
And because I think that you can kind of count on some of that, I don't know if, you know, guys like Benson Mayoa and Bruce Irvin are going to get more or less based on their snap counts from last year. But I wanted to use 2019 as a baseline. Bruce Irvin had the most pressures out of anybody with 23 and 8.5 sacks last season. So not 30 like Clowney had even, but mm-hmm. you know, maybe one of these guys ends up getting more with more playing time this year. Jaron Reed, if, like I said, if he averages 2018, 2019, you're looking at about 22 pressures, 6.5 sacks. The third guy on the list is not a defensive lineman. Jamal Adams had 16 mm-hmm. pressures, 6.5 sacks. So I put him in this top five group. And then Rasheem Green and Benson Mayoa each had 15 pressures. Mayoa had 7 sacks. Rasheem Green had 4. If you look at those five guys, you're at 7 more pressures just based off of last year and 32.5 sacks, which is 5 more than the entire defense had in 2019.
Yeah, there is potential there. I do think that they are better in terms of pass rush, but they're still going to be in the bottom third of the league. So at that point, then you got to look at the rest of the defense and say, okay, how do you make up for that? Because you can't always be great at everything on one side of the ball, right? Like you can't be the team with the best offensive line and the best running backs and the best receivers and the best quarterback every year. Like that doesn't happen.
Right.
You can't have the best D-line, the best linebackers, the best secondary in all of football every single year. It just doesn't always happen. In fact, most years it doesn't. So what are you going to do to work around that? Well, they tried to upgrade the defensive line a little bit. My biggest worry is against the run, because if I were to look at last year, in having thought about this over the course of this week, am I more concerned about their lack of pass rush or the way that they got chewed up on the ground? And to me, it's how they got chewed up to the ground, especially to the edges.
Yes. And I think this is an area that I really haven't heard people talking about in the offseason going into this year. The Seahawks last season were the fourth worst in the league in terms of missed tackles. They had 131 missed tackles last year. The Browns were at the bottom with 140. And just to give you an idea how far they are from the top, the Patriots only had 66 missed tackles, twice as many than some of the teams at the top of the league. That's a huge deficit to try and overcome. And I think if you look at some of these moves, the guys they got rid of that have the most missed tackles, especially in terms of the mm-hmm. the run game, because that 131 number includes in the passing game and in the running game. But your top four guys in terms of missed tackles last year in the run game, Bradley McDougal had 9. Trey Flowers had 8. He's still around. Quentin Jefferson had 7. He's gone. Michael Kendricks had 6, and he's gone. So 3 of your 4 worst tacklers in the run game are now gone.
Right. And played on the outside of the defense, right? I mean, Quentin Jefferson as an end, he's out on the outside. Trey Flowers out on the outside. I guess you would argue McDougal more down in the box.
Sure.
But a perimeter player, I mean, that's that as a safety. And that's where the Seahawks really did struggle last year. I mean, think of all of those outside zone runs from Kyle Shanahan and reverses and all of those little flare screens out to the outside where they would run everybody off and then bring Kittle sneaking behind the line and drop him in underneath. Like that's where we got hammered last year, was out on the edges.
Yeah. And I don't know if I think of those necessarily as missed tackles as to getting to the defender way too late.
That's just it. And to me, it was a lack of speed. And when you have the lack of speed in those situations, then you're going to be in a poor situation to actually make a good tackle, right? And you're probably going to miss a couple extra. So I think with the additions of Adams and also Brooks, I mean, he is so fast. Mm-hmm. And I think he is going to be a big difference in comparison to, say, Kendricks when you talk about how they're going to play the run game. I really do think that was one of the reasons why they picked him up early on in the draft, was to try to address speed on that second level, to actually take away all that gimmicky catfish that Kyle Shanahan runs.
You point toward Brooks, but I went and looked at, you know, Michael Kendricks, not just in the running game, but also in the passing game. He missed more tackles in the passing game than anybody on the team. He had 11 missed tackles, Shaquille Griffin was second with 10. And then you had McDougal, Bobby Wagner, Trey Flowers, and Quandre Diggs with 5 each. So I think that's negligible. But the really big difference in missed tackles for guys last season to this season, if you look at Bruce Irvin as being Michael Kendrick's replacement, mm-hmm. he missed 12 fewer tackles last year.
He also is on the field a lot less, or at least was in Carolina.
I guess he was with the amount of base defense that they played.
Exactly.
I don't think I noticed the snap counts being too different. I'd have to go back and check on that for sure. But another big difference was 14 total missed tackles for Bradley McDougal. Jamal Adams had 4. So you save 10 there. If you look at Quentin Dunbar being picked up to potentially take Trey Flowers' spot, Quentin Dunbar only had 3 missed tackles last year. If you count those 3 guys as their, versus their replacement as the guy who was on the team last year, 32 fewer missed tackles, that puts him around 100. That's at the middle of the pack in the NFL with just replacing 3 guys.
Right. And, you know, the whole missed tackle thing, that's not something that I would wring my hands over a ton, because traditionally Pete Carroll has gotten this team to be a good tackling team year in and year out. Last year feels more like an anomaly than the norm. I mean, that really is something that he prides himself on. I mean, the whole Hawk tackling thing, between upgrading personnel a little bit in that area and then also putting an added emphasis on it throughout training camp, I would be stunned if they struggled in the area of tackling once again. I think the biggest thing to me was having the players to actually match up with these perimeter schemes from the Rams and the Niners and the Cardinals with all their stupid dink and dunk crap. That's what they really went after. So when you say, and what I was trying to get to earlier was, if you have a little bit of a lack of pass rush, how do you make up for that? And I think you've seen the Seahawks flex their philosophy here. They went out and they actually took and put a lot of assets into the secondary. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the Adams trade, they got Diggs last year. They're betting on Shaquille, and the Dunbar trade they thought was the sneaky good steal that was going to put them over the top. And there really is a lot of depth there between the draft picks that they've spent on the secondary as well with Amadi and Blair. Those are a couple other guys that can come in and actually really contribute. That secondary is pretty damn stacked. And that's the thing that you're kind of hoping for to offset the success of that secondary, and having a couple more picks, better coverage, that sort of thing, to take some of the pressure off the linebackers and take the pressure off of the pass rush a little bit.
Yeah. So does it worry you at all that Geno Smith went 8 for 8 in the mock game?
No.
Against that defense?
Really taking a lot out of these preseason games or these mock games and all that, I've never been able to do it one way or the other. There's never a lot of hand wringing. Like, so Geno goes 8 for 8. Would you be more concerned that Geno goes 8 for 8 and Russ went like 6 for 13 or whatever it was, or 6 for 10?
I'd be pretty concerned if he went.
Is there a QB controversy in Seattle?
No, there is not a QB controversy. And you know, really, I think the dropped passes, I think there were dropped passes, 2 dropped passes. Oh, Disley did play in the game, because I heard the reports that he missed 2 passes that were thrown his way. So good for him for getting out on the field. But yeah, gotta catch those, dude.
Oh, yeah. And that'll be something that gets cleaned up. Again, this is the first time they've stepped on a field to play like actual competitive football.
Yeah.
In a long ass time. Like, let's not worry about it.
They're going to do it again on Wednesday. So
that Falcons game is coming up quickly. Week 1, the start of the 2020 season. And I think it's probably a decent enough time to get into what do you think, Brandon? What do you expect out of this team this year in 2020?
Yeah, I do expect a playoff run from this team. And I don't know if I can say a deep playoff run with the concerns on the defensive line, because we've talked about it all offseason that it really does feel like they need that one extra guy, whether it's an interior guy or on the edge. I just don't know if I can say they're that team yet without seeing what they're able to do on the field with that back 7 that is so exciting. But their ability to put up more points this season, I do think that they're going to open it up a little bit more. And I don't think it's because it's pressure over from fans talking Russ, let Russ cook all offseason. I think it really is part of the progression of what they've been trying to do with Brian Schottenheimer, with Russell Wilson, with Chris Carson, and bringing in Greg Olsen as a tight end and seeing more growth out of DK Metcalf. I think this is just part of the progression of these guys growing together as a group. The idea that the San Francisco 49ers, that they're going to regress a little bit from last season. We've already seen their wide receiver group just decimated. It sounds like Brandon Ayuk, who's been their most productive preseason player, their number one, their second draft pick, but taken in the end of the first round, the guy that they had.
Don't worry, Pettis, he's now positioned to really take over and show all of the skills that he has to be a number one receiver. Yeah. I saw that on the 49ers team stream today. It's going to be fine.
Good luck with that, 49ers fans. Dante Pettis, your new number one wide receiver. But, you know, Earl Thomas is out there. Maybe he can switch sides and play wide receiver.
Yeah, maybe, because they're totally set at safety and have zero interest in Earl.
So yeah, I think it's going to be tough when you look at what Jimmy Garoppolo was doing in the playoffs last season and not really having anybody for him to throw to. I think people are going to be a little bit more focused on that run game for San Francisco, especially early on in the season. Now, you know, seeing what guys can do in getting healthy at receiver for the Niners, that'll be interesting. But I do think that it is now positioning the Seahawks to be the one that can take hold of the NFC West. And if they can finish the season number one in the West and getting a home playoff game and not having to go on the road right away like they've had to do these last few years, I think they can make a better run at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so I guess when I'm looking at each and every season, I mean, you start with the big question and kind of work your way down a little bit. Are they a Super Bowl contender, right? Like, is this a season I should have some expectation that they go to a Super Bowl? Like, have some legitimate hope for that? Yes, I think it is. And then you kind of work your way down from there. Now, this is a team that has been on the rise for the last 3 years. They've been getting progressively better. I think if you look at the overall impact of the moves that they've made this year, the improvement of some of the younger guys, the ceiling for this team is definitely a Super Bowl trophy, and it's super exciting. What concerns me is it's really easy to overhype and get too excited about teams based on skill positions and the perimeter players, right? We've seen this happen over and over and over again, whether it was the Texans a few years ago, the Browns last year. I mean, go down the list, right? There's always that team, the Jags a couple years ago.
The Cardinals this year.
The Cardinals are a perfect example of this. They bring in a perimeter star, and now they're, you know, on the cusp of a giant, big, huge playoff run, right? This is what concerns me. Almost all of the moves the Seahawks have made have been really focused, like the big capital has been focused on the perimeter and not the interior.
Yeah.
So you have to ask yourself, do you believe in the moves that have been made on the offensive and defensive line to really hold up? And I actually do believe it in the offensive line. We talked about it a little bit earlier. Lewis is an upgrade over Fetty just by being a person instead of a traffic cone that just goes out there. And, you know, hopefully has a few less penalties. That'd be great. Damian Lewis is looking great at right guard. I actually have very high hopes for him. What I'm hearing out of camp lines up with what you saw from him out of college. That makes sense. It's not one of these guys like DJ Dallas that I'm hearing about. Like, oh my gosh, he's been doing all this stuff. Yeah, I watched his stuff in college. Like, okay, well, I'll hold judgment on that. Yeah,
I'll wait until my eyes tell me what to believe.
Right. But in Lewis's case, what I'm hearing matches up with what you saw in college. I believe in that offensive line and what they've done. I believe in the approach that they've taken to address fixing it. And I believe in Russell Wilson's ability to make about anything freaking work in that case. I mean, he does. He's done it year in and year out. And then you look at the defensive line. Did they do what I wanted them to do? No. No, I'm still frustrated. But with that said, are they better than they were last year at this point? I think in terms of depth, yes, because they were doing better through that first 49ers game. And you kind of saw it coming together and Clowney kind of finding his place, but they were really reliant on that one guy in Clowney and tears the abdominal muscle. And here we are, where towards the end of the season, didn't have any sort of pass rush at all because you were reliant on one dude to really generate all the pressure.
Yeah.
Now they're reliant on four or five guys. And I think just the diversification of that is going to make a big difference. Then you look at the secondary, man. This is a huge upgrade from last year.
Yeah, that's big. It's the biggest upgrade of any position group in the offseason.
And it's not just in terms of Jamal Adams and like who he is as a player in production terms. It's who he is in mentality. It's the dog that he brings to the team, man. I think we've needed that swag in the back end. I mean, I love Shaquille. Great, great. I think he can be a very good corner in this league, and he's proven that he can be an upper tier corner in the league, but he's not that guy.
No,
he's not walking around with Sherman swag, you know, Earl Thomas type swag. He's just not doing it. Jamal Adams does. And we need that extra, the extra juice. And you heard Pete talk about that early on in the acquisition of Adams, is the juice that he brings to the team. I think it's a huge freaking deal. Mm-hmm. Dunbar is such a sneaky, cool John Schneider move. And the fact that we somehow got out of all that legal trouble, like in a miracle of miracles, I'll take it. I'm not even going to ask why. I don't care. Like it's fine. But I'll take it. I think him and Flowers being able to use whichever guy you actually think is going to be the better corner there is going to be huge, and have the other guy play the slot. It's going to be huge. There's just so much depth there. I love Amadi. I think Blair is a very exciting prospect. Then you bring in Jordan Brooks to, you know, add on, and Irvin with that linebacking core of Bobby and KJ. Man, that back seven is really, really talented. This defense has to be better than it was last year. Just, I mean, there's no way that it can't.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the improvements they've made to the back seven. You can put up against any other team in the NFL. And you have to wonder, though, is that going to provide enough improvement to make up for the lack of what they did on the defensive line?
Well, the defensive line, let's say it stays the same. Okay.
Yeah.
And it doesn't.
From last year.
Well, from last year.
Staying the same without Clowney would be okay.
Yeah, it'd be okay. I mean, I would be surprised if it actually stays the same. You have to, at some point, you have to believe in the young guys that they've drafted on the defensive line that they're going to actually come through and be difference makers. And so I'm going to put some faith there in Pete Carroll and John Schneider. Yeah, if they're just about the same, the improvements to the linebacking core and the secondary, this defense has to be better. It has to be. And if that's the case, then maybe you're not one inch away from beating the Niners to win the division and have that first round bye. I mean, that makes all the difference. It's that whole game of inches speech, right? From frickin' any given Sunday.
Any given Sunday.
Yeah, it really is a lot of that. So the defense improving. I think Greg Olsen is going to be such an interesting addition to this offense. The running back depth I like, and then just letting Russ unleashing him just a little bit more, being a little more creative on offense. I think they're ready to do it. When you combine all of those things, to me, there's no way this team isn't an NFC championship game kind of team. Mm-hmm. Like my expectation is they make the NFC championship game and either make the Super Bowl or go down with haymakers. This is going to be a year that they're going to be shooting it out a little bit more than you ever have seen before. And I love the idea that we have Russell Carrington Wilson to bring us home every fourth quarter and try to win those shootouts. I'll take them odds.
I wrote down the question to myself of what I was most optimistic about going into the season. And the first thing that I wrote down that John Schneider will find a nice of defense to be an improvement. And then I don't know if I wrote that at night, and I just don't know what I'm saying because I can't even decode that. A nice,
yeah, I'm not
defense.
Sure what that means, but
I have no idea what that means, why I wrote it that way when I did. But the second thing that I came up with is that Russell Wilson is going to finish this season strong. And that's something that we haven't necessarily seen from him in the MVP race outside of maybe 2015. And I think that was the year that Cam Newton ended up winning it. But, you know, a lot of these years, 2015, he turned 4-5 into 10-6, finished the season really strong. Mm-hmm. But 2018, you know, that year that Mahomes had 50 plus touchdowns, 2019, it was, you know, Russell was right in it. But Lamar, you know, he finished the season so strong with the Ravens going 14-2. You know, that's why Russell Wilson hasn't finished the season with any MVP votes, because he's gone up against Lamar Jackson doing something that no quarterback does with 1,000 rushing yards and finishing 14-2. Mahomes having 50 plus touchdowns in the other season that Russell Wilson performed so well in. And then the MVP year for with Cam Newton, where they basically, did they go 15-1?
Yeah, it was, I believe. Yeah.
15-1 that year. So those are the years that Russell's had his three best seasons, and it's been up against, you know, these incredibly dominant performances. But I think this is going to be the year where he's able to finish the season strong and be in that conversation. That's where I'm most optimistic about.
Well, the media is already setting it up so that they can talk about Russ all year. This seems like the year that everybody's like, okay, it's Russ's turn.
He's never had an MVP vote. That's been like every other week, a reporter brings up, hey, did you know that Russell Wilson has never finished the season with an MVP vote? Crazy stat.
Did you know the reason that is because most people are unaware that if Pete Carroll chews less than 50 pieces of gum in a game, Russell Wilson cannot get an MVP vote. Like, it's one of those obvious things that everybody always brings up, like it's some secret thing.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll chews gum, like when he's coaching. Did you know?
Yeah.
Russell Wilson has never got an MVP vote. Did you know?
it's in that category now, and we may hear it in every single broadcast, especially national primetime broadcasts this season.
Absolutely. Last two factors about this season that I haven't heard anybody talk about, and I think are probably some of the biggest factors that we overlook every single year. And really, one, just special teams. Have we even talked about Dixon and Myers at all this entire offseason?
No.
We have two very good kickers. Okay. We got a great punter and a good kicker.
Don't leave Tyler Ott out of this discussion. You got to give the long snapper some love.
And we have the greatest long snapper to ever lace him up. And if you don't know, you ought to.
You ought to know.
You ought to know. So I think the special teams, you know, especially with a team like the Seahawks, who is relatively young, you have a lot of guys on special teams, and your kick coverage and your return coverage is going to be good. They've turned over, a new leaf there on special teams as well. And I just
have that.
I think, didn't they get, don't we have a new special teams coach?
No. It's been the same guy forever.
Oh.
Brian Schneider.
Yeah. Yeah. I always forget about that guy. Never mind. Never mind. But I do like where that is. You know, I mean, we've talked about,
I mean, kicker. if you were to ask Pete about Brian Schneider, we have the greatest special teams coach in the history of football.
Oh, right. And I overlooked
and
him.
And really, when you were talking about turning over a new leaf, it's because Brian Schneider got a new leaf blower in the offseason, and he turned over several leaves.
Several leaves. I want to say I read a story or something where they're like, we got to change some catfish.
And they do. It hasn't been as good these past few seasons.
Well, anyways. but I do like the idea that we're not talking about kicker going into this season.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been, just think about the last few years where we're like, I don't know, Blair Walsh.
Right.
You know,
can Sebastian Janikowski, you know, get one more year out of his old body.
Right. And if you're in shootouts, man, that kicker position is going to be a huge deal. So I do look for Myers to have a bounce back year. He is a quality kicker. And the last piece, and this is the biggest thing, and it's what really derailed the Seahawks last year. It wasn't lack of pass rush. It wasn't the inability to stop the run on the perimeter. It wasn't not letting Russ cook. It wasn't any of that. It was injuries. This team came unraveled by injuries by the end of the year. They were really starting to round into form right there about week 12. And we were all like, oh my God, holy smokes. Like, this is, they've got a chance, right? And then everybody's bodies blew up all at once. Can we finally have a year like these last 3-4 years? Man, does it not feel like we've just been decimated by injuries. I think it's about time to have that year of like the Niners did last year or the Rams the year before. It's such a huge aspect of a team being successful.
We are due for some good injury luck.
it's about time. And I'll just make this up if it's true or not. I don't know, but I feel like they turned over a lot of their training staff too.
I think that was maybe 2 years ago, last off season.
No, I think you're right, actually, about that. Yeah.
You have a Seahawks podcast, and you don't know the depth they have on the training staff?
Yeah, the health and human performance aspect of the team and the entire breakdown of that roster, not on it, sorry.
Well, I did watch the video that the team put out of all of the steps they've taken with COVID. Mm-hmm. And the dude who walked around and showed just how hard they're working at that. And he seems competent. So probably the best overall training staff in the entire NFL. I know they're doing COVID better than anybody in the NFL.
Well, they've done it better than anybody. Then they also did the Zoom stuff, the rookie orientations and all that stuff leading up to training camp. All of that online that they did was better than it's ever been done ever forever. So it really cool that way.
And if you can't tell, a lot of these comments are tongue in cheek. Like, we really don't believe that they're the best at all these different factors going into the season. But we're hearing about it.
No.
And we have a lot more to talk about with regards to those factors and the players involved coming up after the break. Getting into the second half of the show. Adam, we made it through a pretty good portion of the show, and we didn't talk about the new quarterback that's on this team.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Danny Etling, a guy that they picked up from Atlanta, who, you know, and if he can't beat out Matt Ryan for a job, I don't know where he's going to end up on the Seahawks roster. But, yeah, Danny Etling coming to the Seahawks.
Well, Danny Etling can't beat out some no-name in Atlanta. I don't know what he's even doing in camp. Must be a camp arm.
Sure. Yeah. Do you think they carry actually more than two quarterbacks on the 53-man roster for the first time, considering we haven't heard any reports of Geno Smith being stranded on an island anywhere?
The answer is no. Hmm. No. There's zero chance that they go into this season with three quarterbacks. Yeah. Because they have two and one, and then they got Geno.
And then they'll probably practice squad one of the guys.
Yeah, Gordon.
You think so? Yeah.
People like him.
That's good. And by people, you mean like actual people like on the
writers
team?
Writers and stuff. Yeah. You know, people are like, yeah, he's doing good.
Okay.
I've heard a couple of those. I mean, not what you've heard about other players, you know, but, you know, that he's doing good.
This offseason has been more about the preseason hype than any year I can remember. And I know we've heard it in the past, and we've talked about it in the past, because what, KJ Wright was talking about how great Tedrick Thompson was in practice, and, you know, he was going to be the second coming of Earl Thomas. And obviously that didn't work out because Tedrick is, I don't even know if he's still landed on a roster yet.
No, it's true. Interesting offseason, and the hype around it has been unprecedented. How do you feel about this Earl Thomas thing? Like,
that's where Tedrick went. He went to the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So, and the Chiefs are, in fact, I think my team favorite for picking up Earl because they have magic salary cap money. And why not bring in Earl Thomas?
No, it'll be the Cowboys. You know it is.
Even though they're playing it cool, they're like, oh, yeah, we don't want Earl Thomas.
Yeah, it's definitely the Cowboys. I don't see how there's any way that it isn't.
Did the Ravens not know what they were getting into with Earl? Because I feel like they should have known.
No, I don't think they did. I kind of don't blame them. I mean, what were they supposed to know? That Earl was unhappy that John Schneider wouldn't give him more money at the end of his tenure in Seattle. And then when he got hurt, he was pissed off about it, flipped off Pete Carroll. Like, was that supposed to be something that would predict that he would be having foursomes with his brother and getting in fist fights? Like, I don't know how that's a predictive thing there.
I think the fist fights thing could maybe be predictive in a sense, because there were all the reports of him being unhappy with various teammates throughout his time here. Now, he never punched anybody, but maybe they never deserved it.
It's hard telling not knowing. The thing with Earl that is the kind of the saddest is he does seem to be unraveling a little bit right now. And just the idea that you hear the reports from Peter King, and who knows how true or not they are, but the idea that he was missing a walkthrough, showing up late to things, missing multiple assignments out there in practice. Like, that is not the intense, focused Earl Thomas that we had here in Seattle. So what's going on? Like, is there, it feels like there's other things going on in his life that has him a little rattled and distracted.
Well, I think the offseason incident that got them so much attention, I think the Ravens probably did want to go ahead and release him after that. And so now I wonder if all these other things that are coming up, this is just now they have their excuse to get out from underneath the contract that was such a big issue that they couldn't have gotten out from based on the incident with him and his brother in the offseason. Now they can point to these things and say, oh, yeah, well, he missed a couple meetings and he punched a guy in the face. And guys throw punches in practice all the time in the offseason. You don't maybe necessarily hear about it, but with that, with him having that record and them maybe wanting to move on from him, now having that excuse, it's built into where they don't have the financial obligations because of it.
Well, when the little leadership council on the team, you have the guys, the OGs, the ones that are really kind of have the pull in the locker room are all kind of like, I'm sick of it.
Yeah. How is Earl Thomas not on that leadership council for one, being the type of leader you would expect him to be? That's a sign right there, I would suppose.
Just didn't fit into the culture, right? So when you have that and then the offseason drama, right? And like you said, you're just trying not to give him an excuse to be able to cut you without giving you the money, right? And Earl took the bait and he goofed up, man, because by using the language conduct detrimental to the team, I believe I read that it would save them like $10 million in the guarantees that they owed him.
Right.
Just by being able to say that, you know, his little whatever it was he was doing in the offseason, they couldn't have said conduct detrimental to the team. Conduct detrimental to a marriage, maybe, but right. Not conduct detrimental to a team.
Did not have an impact on the team.
Right. So, he gave him the excuse and now he's no longer a Baltimore Raven. And there was this hot second there where I thought, well, we could run a lot of three safety sets. Yeah.
Well, you know, when I do look at the Seahawks depth and I see that Lano Hill is still among the safeties, I mean, wherever position that Earl is playing, whether that would be depth and it would be an improvement over Hill.
Yeah. So Earl's not going to be a backup somewhere, still being a top five.
And he's
safety
not coming
in the
to
league.
Seattle.
And he's not coming.
The hoopla factor is still there with Earl Thomas.
Right. And I think we anti-hooplawed that right at the right time. Okay, bye. Rooting for him, though. You know, other than if he goes to, say, the Cowboys or the Niners.
Bring in a little crazy to the Niners. And I think...
Nope. Can't do it. I can't do it. I cannot see Earl and Sherm both at the same time in Niners uniform. No.
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 Okay.
No. No, forever no. Please, God, no.
You had me going from this perfect transition into the preseason hype, and now we got all on Earl, and I don't know how that happened.
I don't know, but really, much like most people do about everything, it doesn't matter who's in office ever, but you always blame the president, right? You heard thanks, Obama, for like a long time. Uh-huh. You know, people just blaming him for everything. I'm actually blaming this postseason or this offseason hype on the president of the United States, because this is how he talks. You know, it's always, look, the Seattle Seahawks had the greatest offseason in the history of offseasons. Pete Carroll's a magician. Russell Wilson, he is just exquisite. Unbelievable. This team, they'll go 42-0 this year. No doubt about it. 14 Super Bowls in one season. Mark it down.
I think that's maybe the best impression I've ever heard you do of anybody on the show.
Oh, good. Yeah.
It may be the only time you've even done an impression on the show. So
maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I mean, it was the best Donald Trump impersonation ever.
Yeah. Well, we had, I mentioned KJ's praise of Tedrick, Justin Britt last year talking about Puna Ford, how he was a future Hall of Famer. And, you know, Punis, he could still be that. But I think the thing that got me over the top with the praise this offseason, it came from Pete Carroll. And it came with him talking up the new acquisition, Philip Dorsett.
He's the fastest guy we've ever had here, Greg. You know, I mean, he runs in the time realms we don't even think really exist.
And a lot of people picked up on that first part, right? That he was the fastest guy that we've had ever had here.
Right.
I want to talk about the second part.
Yeah, that's the fun part, right? The fact that Philip Dorsett, when he runs, he creates a wormhole and like actually like pops in and out of existence through the realms of time.
He runs in the time realms we don't even think really exist.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, there's got to be some dimensional shifts there, right? Like maybe like the fourth or fifth dimension. Like maybe Philip Dorsett is the greatest receiver ever in the fifth dimension. We just don't know it because it's a time realm we don't know about.
Dorsett is so fast, he already went back in time 1 year, not even 1 year, just 6 months, to catch the pass at the goal line and get into the end zone, where instead of seeing our tight end get tackled 1 yard short. Philip Dorsett got in. We won the NFC West last year because of the pickup of Philip Dorsett in the offseason and his speed. He created, like you said, created the wormhole, went back in time. We're going to be hanging up an NFC West champion banner now for that week two game against the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, so he kind of, the way he goes through time, right, is a lot like how Superman did in that one movie where he just went backwards around the planet, like really fast. That's what Dorsett did, just, you know, but on foot because he's that fast. And he just did that and then went back into time. So now he's coming back to the future and there's just going to be like a banner that pops up now. Like, will it fade in like Marty McFly's hand, like faded away when he was starting to get erased? Yeah.
We'll fade in a Super Bowl 49 champion banner because we beat the Patriots by 6 touchdowns instead of losing that game.
Right. I mean, all I know is that we really don't know because he runs in time roles that we don't even know exist. We'll never know.
They're not measurable. You can have a hand timer, but it doesn't do you any good.
Good God. There's been some buttes this year, right? Like that one, you know, basically wormhole door set. I think my other favorite one is I tuned into training camp exactly once. I think it was Friday. I watched that hour and got to revel in the 10 minutes of talking about Terrell Davis clone, future Hall of Famer, Travis Homer, who, according to the, I don't know who was doing kind of the color commentator.
It was Michael Bumpus doing the color commentary, and he was talking about how Travis Homer's teammates are calling him TD.
Right, TD. So he's now Terrell Davis. So that's cool. That I didn't see that. And then my favorite part about his breakdown of him is he's really a speed back. He's one of, you know, that's his game. He's shifty, real speed back, except for not. But he's also you know, power. He's a downhill runner. Just really, you know, between the tackles, which no, he's not. He's just kind of one of those, you know, average guys at everything.
Yeah.
Travis Homer, future Hall of Famer, Terrell Davis lookalike. 10 minutes of that beautiful, beautiful content to be followed up directly by DK Metcalf, basically having blossomed into Julio Jones, this offseason.
Yeah. Those are the two guys that definitely stood out from that commentary. And then DJ Dallas getting a lot of hype over these last, few days, apparently coming out of nowhere. And getting a lot of hype because I guess, well, with Chris Carson being away from the team with his family thing. And
right.
I don't know if they're just, you know, not using Carlos Hyde in practice because DJ Dallas is so amazing.
Well, I mean, Hyde's getting up there and he's kind of your, in case of emergency, break glass back right now. So why would you be running him into ground in practice? He knows how to play football. It's running back. Okay. I mean, this isn't quarterback. There's a big difference.
Saw an article here these last few days. PJ Johnson, the latest offseason acquisition for the defensive interior. He's a disruptive force in the middle, Adam.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's not long before he's the next Gerald McCoy.
Yeah, without question. I mean, it's just kind of in his DNA. You could see it coming from a mile away. PJ Johnson, the next Gerald McCoy.
And then if you can't hype up the guy's games, you just talk about how amazing they look. LJ Collier is an amazing shape.
Amazing shape. Never been in that sort of shape ever. I mean, that's definitely going to translate. But I do have a very serious question for you, Brandon.
Okay.
Very serious question. In the history of humans, who is a better overall human being for humankind and the planet? Mother Teresa or Tyler Lockett? Which is it? Who's the better human?
the better quality human overall person.
Yeah. I mean, or maybe is it Gandhi, Nelson Mandela? I don't know. Like, or is it Tyler Lockett?
Have we heard some amazing hype around Tyler Lockett, the human, this last week?
Oh my God. In that same like Friday practice, no better guy ever than Tyler Lockett. Like he both cured cancer and solved peace in the Middle East before breakfast this morning. I mean, it's just what Tyler Lockett does. It just oozes out of him.
Uh-huh.
Greatest human ever.
The one that was a little bit weird was hearing Pete Carroll talk about how amazing Jordan Brooks' legs and butt looked.
Him and Chris Sims have been talking apparently, because that's Chris Sims' shtick. He loves legs and ass. Yeah. I didn't know Pete Carroll was an ass man.
Yeah, I guess he wasn't until he saw Jordan Brooks.
Hey, whatever, man. As long as he's fast and he picks up the defensive playbook and can be out on the field, I'm happy.
Tackle people. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the media. And we get two more weeks of this. At least two and a half more weeks of this.
Yeah, exactly. I cannot wait for the regular season. And you can tell the media is in full on hype mode, because for our quarterback who never gets hyped by the media, right? Like, they've actually gone to the lengths to almost unanimously declare him the second best quarterback in the NFL. Now they still got to hold him down a little bit. They can't, give him full on like best dude on the planet praise. Right. But they've taken him all the way up to number two.
Yeah. I'll take it. Finally getting the recognition.
It's been fun. Well, yeah. Yeah.
George Kittle got paid in this past week since we did our last show. They got a decent deal. Under 16, I was going to say that was a decent deal for the Niners.
And
they got in at like 15.
Yeah. How long was it? 4-year deal?
He signed a 5-year, $75 million contract.
Ooh, 3 years too long.
Yeah, so he's locked up until he's 31 or 32. He'll turn 32 and be an unrestricted free agent.
That'll be interesting. I think he'll be retired by then.
Man, only one good contract?
It's just the way he plays the game.
You know who I like the way they play the game?
Hmm.
Our new members of the flock.
They're the best flockers that have ever flocked. They really are.
Start things off with Nathan Sheets. He came in with $20 via PayPal. Says, been listening to y'all since the 2019 offseason. Love the content. It's the only football podcast that regularly makes me laugh. Good work, guys. About time I pay my dues and quit freeloading.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah. Look, and he got in way before the two-year deadline there to not be considered a freeloader. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of... I've seen PayPal donations made in that $20 range. That's the best $20 donation on PayPal I've ever seen.
He donated that harder than anybody's ever donated $20.
Look, I mean, some people can click on the donate button, like the pay button, right? Like with one finger. He did it. He could do it with any finger. He's so versatile.
Brian Shaw came in with the executive producer donation at gettingtheflock.com. $90 a month. He came in strong with the executive producer donation.
Look, and see, and that I would expect nothing less out of Brian through an offseason, right? I mean, there's only so many little flockers that understand the things that maybe last season didn't go as well as they had hoped, and then actually put the work in the offseason, and then you're really seeing it all come together for him right here with this donation. I mean, just outstanding work.
And if you're ever on an airplane that just lands so smoothly that you ask yourself, did we even land? Did we even touch the ground? Or it just feathered itself down onto the runway? Is Brian the pilot of this plane? Because it's to be expected. I mean, if it's not Brian piloting the plane, Brian trained him.
There's no question about that. I mean, you would believe that was actually done by like AI or something. But no, that's just the greatness on the stick that Brian brings.
Jay Newfield came in via getintheflock.com. $512 a month.
Nice, man. I appreciate it, Jay. $512. That's an interesting amount. Like where is head at? Ugh, I can't even talk to him. Where was his head at on 512?
Well, he didn't want to just go the straight five, and then being, one of the great members of the 12s, perhaps the greatest member of the 12s, he had to make sure to tag that on at the end.
That's true. That's true. It's his attention to detail, Jay, that is really unparalleled in the little flocker donation community. It's unbelievable.
Jacob Myers came in via gettingtheflock.com as well at $5, said, my free trial period has ended. Thanks for all the great content, guys. Keep up the good work. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks, man. And at $5 a month there, I mean, he's donating at a level that in time realms that we just don't know that they exist. It's unbelievable.
Unreal. Much like JC Schilling, who came in at 1212, our newest member of the Ring of Honor group. And he says, I admit, I've been feeling guilty for a while. I started a new job with a bit of a commute, and my wife recommended that instead of filling my car with rage-filled screams at the horrible drivers in Western Washington, I fill it with soothing podcasts. I begrudgingly took her advice, and as new podcasters often do, I reached out to my social network to find the best ones. I found myself trying to follow 10 new shows based off the wildly inaccurate, quote-unquote, best show recommendations, and almost called the whole thing off. Until I found you fellas. As my interest in the other podcasts fell away faster than the Los Angeles Rams fan base after their new logo was revealed, I realized that I was what is known in the industry as a quote-unquote freeloader. I tried to justify the guilt away. Oh, you won't keep listening, I told myself, knowing that that was a lie. Oh, they probably stop episodes in the off-season. Wrong again! And as I heard your Montanian drawl sweetly soothing my i5 rage last week on the 300th catfish episode, huge respect, by the way, I knew it was time to put my money where my heart is. You guys are awesome. I'm always learning from the show, laughing along with the rabbit holes and side narratives, and in a pretty great mood when I get where I'm going these days. I do have to throw some shade at Adam, as the kids are saying these days, for his sophomore slump juju he put on our boy DK Metcalf last week. I'm with Brandon and all in on him, probably the most excited about an addition to the team since we lost Cam, and will be my next jersey purchase for sure. If he has a rough year, that is now forever recorded and 100% on your shoulders for putting that evil on him. Finally, I can't finish without saying thanks again for all the time and effort you guys put into this. You really have something special and are appreciated. From JC Schilling, a.k.a. Little Baby Flocker in University Place, Washington.
Man, that was an awesome email, JC. And welcome to the Ring of Honor. You're going to fit right in. I can tell you that right now. That was strong. And you actually made me laugh with that little Rams reference there. Appreciated that quite a bit. You know, if Brandon, we're able to make him not see red while driving on I-5, I would say we're magic, because that feels almost impossible.
Yeah. And so now we're not hyping up JC. We're hyping up ourselves with this. This is a magical podcast.
Yeah. Well, and
we can perform actual miracles by getting JC not to drive into another driver.
I think that's great. And I'm really happy that we're able
Who's
to help
better,
JC.
Us or Tyler Lockett?
Little column A, little column B. I don't know. It's hard to say. Hard to say. I do think that him accusing me of putting DK Metcalf in some sort of spell or curse. I did not say that he was going to have a sophomore slump. I did not. Those were not the words that came out of my mouth.
You mentioned the words sophomore slump adjacent to DK Metcalf. You may not have said that he's due for it, but I know that those words were uttered within the conversation.
I'm just saying that most players, they have these expectations that they're going to become only the most, amazing receiver ever after having one good year. And most of the time, that isn't what happens. I would say he can still be awesome like he was last year. Like, how is that saying it's a sophomore slump? How dare JC try to put that on my Hakra? I reject it.
This will be the year, though, Adam, that we finally have. I went back and looked at it. We've only had two 1,000-yard receivers one time in franchise history. Do you know who those two wide receivers were?
Oh, my goodness.
Is that on the same team in the same season?
Same team in the same season.
I'll even give you a hint that Steve Largent wasn't one of them.
Yeah, I was thinking it might be the Hasselbeck era teams. Like, that'd have been my guess.
It was before the Hasselbeck era.
Oh, no.
The closest it's come in the Russell Wilson era was Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham, when Graham had like 923 yards. And
right.
And Metcalf had 900 last year, which I think might have been the second closest. That
it had to have been a Joey Galloway year. Is there in somebody else?
Yeah, Brian Blades and Joe Galloway.
Okay, there it is.
And do you know who the quarterbacks were who made that? Because one of the quarterbacks...
Craig and Freeze.
It was Meyer and Freeze.
Okay. I was close.
Yeah. Pretty wild that it was those two quarterbacks that led us to have two 1,000-yard receivers. Right. And they both just got over, too. It was like Blades was 1,050 and Galloway was 1,040 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. I mean, that could very well happen to Tyler and DK this year, despite me saying, hey, maybe he's not going to turn into Megatron this year. Like, that's not saying he's going to have a sophomore slump. But I am flattered by JC's overall email there. I mean, to have our show stand out among lots of other podcasts out there, especially when they were all highly recommended by people he trusts.
Yeah.
For ours to kind of, you know, be one that rises to the top there, that makes me feel pretty good.
It does feel good. Yeah. Hey, one other thing that makes me feel pretty good over the last few years, we've had people say, you know, I went to getintheflock.com. I'm not into the monthly donation thing. Yeah. I like to budget my money a little bit differently. The monthly doesn't work for me. Can we just do a year rather than monthly? And now, if you go to getintheflock.com, you now have that option. You can do an annual donation option. So you can pick one of the levels, and rather than monthly, you can do the annual thing. And I even made it, Adam, with our Pick'em League coming up. If you want to go in, and the $1 a month level doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense for a monthly donation, which is why we hadn't put it up there. But I thought for at least the next month or so leading into the season, we could leave it up there for people who want to get in for the year. And get in that way.
But if you're really going to be a baller, right? If you're going to have the kind of breakout season in 2020 as a little flocker that is really kind of expected of all y'all, then you would do 36 for the whole year, and then you'd be in the Pick'em League.
Well, actually, you know, the Pick'em League is something that everybody is able to get into. It's,
well, the regular Pick'em League or the
you know, like the extra prizes, like the... Yeah. Yeah. And well, it's because we really count on the people who donate at that $3 a month level to pay for the Pick'em prizes.
Yes.
Because we like to have good stuff.
Yeah. No. And you do an awesome job of taking those donations and turning them into rad prizes for people. And the other thing is, and you folks wouldn't know this, but I get lots of texts from Brandon when it comes time for the shopping of the things. Mm-hmm. And, if you just saw the joy and excitement that, you know, he goes through while he's doing the shopping for the prizes for the Pick'em League, you would donate $40 a month because it was just worth it. It's worth it to see the joy on his face. It's amazing.
It's fun. It's like I get to scratch that itch of wanting like all of the Seahawks memorabilia in my mm-hmm. house, but then I don't actually have, since I don't have room for it, I can send it away. Like, I get to see it. I get to hold it in my hands before it then goes out to somebody. So it's like, I get to appreciate it, but then I also know that it's going somewhere good after it leaves my hands.
Yeah. It's the best of both worlds there. Cause you actually get to collect it for a minute. Uh-huh. Right. And then you also get to declutter your house and send it off to somebody else.
Right. I'm feeling productive.
Yeah. It's like, what am I going to do with this? I only have so much wall space. It's going to go off to this awesome person who probably cheated at Pick'em, and that's why they beat us.
So yeah, if you do want to get in the Pick'em League, details are up at getintheflock.com right now. Those are folks who are members of the flock. They get to know about it in advance of everybody else. But yeah, we'll put up a link as well. Look for it in the show notes. Joining the Pick'em League, it's up at cbssports.com. I did try it out, and because early on mm-hmm. people are trying to save their picks, it wasn't working. Well, now that we're 3 weeks out from the start of the season, then that's actually working. You can save your picks now, which is important for a Pick'em League.
Yeah, that would be a major component of it, yes. And make sure you come up with a decent team name. I mean, none of this just username crap, any of that. Like, that is a tradition in the show here, is that everybody works really hard at those team names.
Yeah, don't just use your name. You have to come up with a good team name. And we have a decent amount of characters. It's not unlimited. But it's like Twitter. You have to keep it within the limits, but also mm-hmm. it creates a degree of difficulty for hilarity, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And the punnier it is, the better, because we're old white guys.
We like such things.
And so we can look down that list of team names and get a little chuckle. Everybody can.
But it would be awesome to have all you guys sign up for the Pick'em League. It's an absolute ball every year. Brandon does do a great job with the prizes. And so we will have the two Pick'em Leagues then, yeah? The one open for everybody and one for $3 and above?
We're just going to have everybody in the same one. We just make it easy.
Okay.
And everybody in the same one. And we'll do the one prize every week.
Okay, great. That's I like the idea that it also just kind of levels the playing field.
Yeah.
And gives... you know, a freeloader a chance to actually win, you know, one of those weekly prizes. And the thing is it's a lot like being an undrafted free agent, right? Like they just haven't been recognized yet and they haven't gotten in the flock or on the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have a chance to rise up.
But generally freeloaders don't win because their Hakra is so poor. But, you know, it's an extra obstacle to overcome.
It absolutely is. There's no doubt about it. It's like a poor three cone drill time.
You can still make it in the league, but it's a little bit of a struggle.
But you're going to get drafted more like the sixth round or even undrafted, you know.
But really, the Pick'em League is for fun. And that's the thing that I think I want to emphasize the most.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make sure I understood where we're going with it this year. And I really like the decisions made, man. I think that's going to be good. The other thing that kind of stood out was some of the messages from the little flockers this week is that the guilt seems to be working the best in terms of getting people in the flock. And I'd like to say that that makes me feel bad, but it doesn't. I actually like it. And really, if you're not in the flock, you're doing it wrong and kind of screwing over the show. So I don't hope you sleep at night.
Well, obviously we've guilted in some few people over this past week but we also have the carrot approach. We have the tiny pieces of SeahawksStuff.com. Another thing that we do is the monthly giveaway of the tiny piece of Seahawks stuff. And almost all of them are in the form of a Russell Wilson card with a tiny piece of Seahawks jersey. All you have to do is comment Go Hawks at tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com and we'll select someone at random and be sure and get your comment in by the end of the month.
There you go. We all need a tiny piece of Russell Wilson in our life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of them.
Good.
I get to go through the box.
Yeah, the next one you have to get is Tyler Lockett because he is the greatest human being that's ever, you know.
I think I might have one with Russ and Tyler.
My God, that thing, that has to be like towards the end of the season, we give that one away. Because like, can you imagine how high your Hakra would be lifted in your own home if that was in your home? Like the boost to the overall Hakra of your residence.
Why would we boost someone's Hakra at the end of the season though? I say we do that one next month.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Like a carrot at the end of the year. I'm very confused by the positive reinforcement. I want to go back to guilt.
Getintheflock.com or SeahawksPodcast.com/support. And just to emphasize how cool our flock is, one of our original members, or maybe the original member of the flock, Floctimus Prime, Keith Kedover, he is putting together a mask order form for some premium Seahawkers podcast masks. He's collecting the money for that. They're $22 a piece. You can go to SeahawkersPodcast.com/mask, and that'll take you to the order form, and Keith will get those ordered up. Try and get your money in here by the 1st of September. And that way he can turn those around and get those ordered out pretty quickly. $22 includes shipping. That's U.S. only. And if you are overseas and want one, maybe you can hit me up or hit Keith up and we can figure out what the extra shipping cost is to wherever you're at. SeahawkersPodcast.com/mask. One other way to support the show is by giving us positive reviews. And Charlie, who's 12 years old, he checked in with a review last week. He checked back in, said, almost forgot. I will be joining the flock soon.
Catfish!
The 49ers and Rams from Charlie.
Watch your mouth, Charlie. But no, I'm just kidding, buddy. That's awesome, dude. Can't wait to have you. And go Hawks, buddy.
Another review came in from Seahawks fan 1234. Not sure how he knows my computer password. It says, this is by far the best Seahawks podcast. I finally have a place to vent my hatred of the catfish 49ers. And I love Adam's rants and Brandon's calm commentary. My name is Jackson. And you read my email to you guys. And I swear it changed my life. Go Hawks from Denver.
Awesome, man. Hey, appreciate that, Jackson. And look, I know that you're in Denver, and so anything we can do for you to try to help you through living around all those donkey fans. Like, we're here for you, buddy. Like, we are.
Brian came in. He was the one who was hearing disturbing messages within the closing show music. He has his feedback report.
Yes.
Brian says, you guys are still better at life than Troy Aikman, Joe Buck, and Skip Bayless. Having listened to and downloaded, thanks, by the way, the Blue Thunder soundtracks, I have cleared my chakra and no longer hear those insane words anymore.
Oh, thank God. I'm very happy for Brian. I was worried, man.
I know.
I was worried.
I also want to say thank you for my new alarm tone, ringtone, and text notifications with all different Seahawks tracks. It's super cool. And Blue Thunder is a badass drum line and brings me back to my marching band days from 2000 to 2004. I would like to clarify, although aware of Blue Thunder, I never realized that's what they were saying. You know, like a Rorschach ink block test. Funny thing how fixing my hearing chakra has made everything in life just a little better. Even the annoying little pathetic imitation of a dog next door isn't as yappy. Well, he still is yappy, but I don't care as much anymore. Thank you, Seahawkers Podcast, your personal Hawker Master, Brian from Caldwell, P.S.
Catfish!
The Four Raka, go Hawks.
See, now Brian's got to figure it out. He's, now that his Hawker's all lined out, you know, and is a master of keeping his Hawker that way, that little annoying dog that's yapping next door, eventually, since his, you know, hearing Hawker is fixed, that's going to start sounding like go Hawks every time that the little dog barks. It'll be a lot less annoying.
Little yippy go Hawks dog, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I do have one more email, Adam, but I think that one I'm gonna save for our last segment of the show. So what do you say we get on to some Do Better and Better at Life?
Okay, well, that's very interesting. Yes, Do Better. My Do Better this week is, let me pull it up here, it's for the website FanDuel. And I know a lot of people will be like, Brandon here would be like, well, there's a lot of reasons he doesn't like FanDuel. Yeah.
It's a good way to lose your money, for one.
Yeah. He's not big on those shiesty gambling guys taking your money. But yes, this week, FanDuel Sportsbook, my Do Better is aimed at you. As I was reading through preseason predictions of what the Hawks will or won't do, and trust me, if you guys wanted to hear a little bit more about our actual record predictions and going through the schedule, I think Brandon wants to release that for the little flockers as a bonus show. So maybe donate. Tease. You can get that. It's going to be good. I promise you.
You can donate or you can listen via our Seahawkers podcast app.
Exactly. Yeah. There's the cheat code, right?
That's the cheat code.
You just go around it that way.
You've made it this far in the show. You deserve to know the cheat code.
Exactly. No, that's smart by you. I like where your head's at with that. But I've been reading a lot of these preseason predictions. And, you know, honestly, for the first time in a couple of years here, like most people are like 11-5, 12-4, you know. I mean, winning records going to the playoffs, whether they win the division or not, that's a little up in the air.
USA Today did have us at 9-7, but they had us beating the 49ers in the playoffs. And I felt that kind of balanced out their prediction just a little bit.
I guess, but then I get to the FanDuel Sportsbook prediction, and their over-under bet for wins on the season for the Seahawks is 9.5. And now, at first, that doesn't sound so bad. You're like, well, okay. I mean, I guess I can see that if you're a little more skeptical, right? But then you look at the odds, and the odds for the under is minus 155. So meaning they think it's more likely that they finish under 9.5 wins. Under 9.5 wins. You know, how is that possibly, in any way, shape, or form, the more likely of the outcomes? You know how many times Russell Wilson has finished under 9.5 wins in a season? Take a wild guess.
Once.
And it was by half of catfish game. Like, it could have so easily been over. And the last, every year since then, they have added to their win total. And you're telling me that it is more likely that the Seahawks finish under 9.5 wins on the season? You guys are catfishing idiots. Do better.
Are they taking into account that the NFL teams might not play a full season? Is that going into it? Like, if the Seahawks only play 13 games this season, then they'll probably be 9-4.
I don't think that's what they're going towards here. No, this is a 16 game season prediction.
Because I kind of like the outlook of maybe betting the under in a lot of cases just to kind of hedge on the fact that maybe the you have a situation, you know, a lot like with the, all these false positive tests that have come out.
Sure.
That maybe the NFL has to say, okay, well, based on safety and all these positives that we're not sure if they're positives, we need to take a week off.
Yeah, so I get that, but I'm sure this bet has to be, you can't make that bet and have it be like, well, for however many games it's played, it's got to be a null and void if they don't play 16.
Don't tell me how it works like you know.
I just saying, there's no way I'd take the bet unless those were the terms, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but boy, howdy, putting a couple bones on the over with FanDuel Sportsbook, and I'm getting odds for the over on the Hawks. That's it's enticing.
It's got you interested, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Because they're morons.
Hey, I've got a moron who landed in my do better this week.
Yeah.
Kemos Iverand. We haven't talked about Kemos Iverand, Adam. Cut after he was trying to sneak a woman into the team hotel here this past week or so. And, you know, I think part of the reason why it bugs me so much is watching Hard Knocks over these past couple weeks and all of the precautions that teams are having to go through because they're trying to keep players healthy this season.
Yes.
And yet you've got a guy who's on the fringes of making the roster, who can't bother to, you know, follow the rules. And in a year where following the rules is pretty darn important to a team and has the potential to impact, I don't know, guys like your head coach more than it impacts, you know, some other players on the team who, may not have quite as much to worry about, but still have the potential of having to sit out a couple weeks if they are infected. And here we got a dude trying to sneak someone in who hasn't been inside their team environment. And for Siverin, for trying to get around this by being pretty darn stupid with regard to the rules, do better.
Yeah, man, I read that story and it did make me chuckle a bit. So let's take the whole idea of putting the team at risk with the COVID part, like aside, like let's separate that.
Yeah, that one's obvious. Here. We can separate that one.
Right. Okay. Yeah, of course. That's freaking stupid. Come on, dude. But it's kind of a baller move for a dude who will probably never be staying in an NFL team hotel again throughout his lifetime. Right. This is like his one shot. Uh-huh. And so he tried to like sneak in his lady so they could share that experience. Right. Like for the one season that he gets to do that. Like, I kind of get it.
I mean, I get it in the sense that, that's the way that a lot of people act in their early 20s.
Yes.
But also the execution, not exactly the greatest either, because he reportedly tried to put her in Seahawks gear to make her look as though she were one of the players.
Or one of the staff, maybe. Right.
It said players, but yeah.
Players. Then I respect it even more. That's hilarious. But when you take the COVID things and separate it from it, put that back in there. It's like, you're an idiot, dude. Stop. If you make Russell Wilson sick, I swear to God.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I'm coming for you.
And they did the right move, kicked him off the team.
Yeah.
Afterward. And unfortunately, fully embarrassed by the amount of national attention that story got as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Although it did, it upped his Q score, right? Like people know who he is.
People know how to say his name, and yeah.
Right, yeah. It might be better for his deal overall.
I figured we couldn't make it through the show without talking about it.
I'd actually forgotten about it already. Like, the news cycle had already gotten, like, that long, where right. I was just like, yeah, that was already done. But one thing I couldn't forget about was a news article I read about a week ago, and this one stuck with me. And this is my Better at Life than Skip Bayless nominee this week. It's for the symbol of America, the majestic bald eagle. That's right. The bald eagle. And one in particular, one that patrols the shores of Lake Michigan, protecting our freedom at all times, soaring high above with a gleam in his eye, looking for anything that might be dangerous, like Department of the Environment drone flying over the Great Lakes. This majestic bald eagle swooped in from the sky and destroyed one of the Department of the Environment's drones. And I love this. I love that nature conquered this stupid drone out there that's doing who knows what. Who's know what? Freedom rang from the sky And the eagle destroyed the drone that is actually called an Eagle. Like it, its acronym is like an EGLE.
Oh, that's
funny. Saw this imposter in the sky, the brazen eagle. He took it down and took it to the bottom of the lake. That's my better at life than Skip Bayless this week.
Probably trying to keep all those Canadians out from trying to cross our borders.
Sure. Yeah, the massive influx of all the Canadian refugees.
Yeah, you never know.
Fleeing their healthcare for all and
and relatively COVID-free country.
Right. Yeah. It's just this influx.
You don't know. You just don't know.
Don't know. And probably maybe the thing here is that they would if it wasn't for that eagle patrolling the Lake Michigan area.
Yeah. Now we're free of I don't know what.
Of government overreach with these stupid drones. Because I don't know, like here in Montana, we have a disdain for drones. It's just something that's kind of in our DNA. It feels like somebody spying on you in a way. And so much so that every political cycle, every candidate has an ad that either features them A, shooting a drone out of the sky or B, shooting a TV. And I want to know what the odds, maybe I should call FanDuel Sportsbook and find out the odds of which political candidate in Montana this year will be the first to air an ad of them shooting a drone out of the sky. Cause it's happening. You know, it is.
That's a good question. Yeah. I don't know who would be the first, but it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like Gianforte to me.
I was going to lean toward the governor race versus the Senate race, but yeah, right. That's definitely where my mind is leaning to.
Yeah. And nobody knows the Democratic nominee's name. So maybe it needs to be him.
get out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's only the guy who was our lieutenant governor, but I still don't know his name.
No. And you could go with Mr. Lieutenant Governor, I guess, if you met him.
An underrated guess would be to pick our congressional candidate, Kathleen Williams. I bet she could shoot a drone out of the sky.
To be honest, I bet you she's probably the best shot of the group.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
That's an underrated pick. It's my horse pick.
She looks capable. That's all I'm saying.
My better at life this week is for one of our longtime listeners. And he wrote us a handwritten letter, Adam, this last week. And so for going the extra mile, I took him out of the email segment and dropped in Mr. John the Bar Davidson into the Better at Life segment this week.
Wow. Okay.
Dear Adam and Brandon, well, something good came out of being in lockdown. I went into my man cave, clutching a bottle of Caribbean rum and all my Pink Floyd albums, and emerged with a box of flies. If anybody's not aware, John is a fly tying extraordinaire.
Indeed.
And he goes on, says, they have all been tied by me to the original patterns using all the materials available at the time. No modern substitutes apart from the floss on the hot spot spider. I hope whoever wins them gets great pleasure from them as much perhaps as I did tying them. I think this makes a unique gift and is nearly as good as my knife. Go Hawks, from John Davison. And yes, John talking about the knife that the buck knife that he won as he's our reigning Pick'em League champion going into 2020.
He is. And so it sounds like these flies are being donated to the show to.
They are.
Oh,
they will be a Pick'em prize.
That's awesome.
I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to accumulate prizes for the month. And then that way, when people win the week, they can choose from kind of a list of prizes. And so that way, if somebody is because I don't really want to put up the flies as a weekly prize and then have somebody who doesn't even fish win them.
Right. And yeah, because they'd be bummed. John would be bummed because they're not getting used. Right.
Yeah, like, they need to go to somebody who needs them.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just have that as like an option for a prize like every week until somebody who's interested in fly fishing
takes it off the board.
Right.
So for bringing us prizes for the Pick'em League, John the Bard Davidson, better at life than Skip Bayless.
I think that's awesome. And that's awesome of John to do that, man. He's a killer dude, man.
Yeah. And they're beautiful flies too. They come in a nice box. There's probably, there's like at least 40 of them probably. And he even printed out a couple of pieces of paper that explains
identification.
Yeah, it identifies them and explains a little bit about them.
That's really awesome. And that actually inspires me a little bit to maybe start to do the fly fishing thing. I've never been into it. My thing. But it feels like I'm wasting a giant opportunity being the cabin is from a Blue Ribbon trout stream.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't there a stream just not too far down from where you are?
It's like a quarter mile from the cabin. Yeah. And it's one that people pay thousands of dollars to come and fish.
Yeah. You should take advantage of that.
Yeah. Maybe one of the prizes one of these years will have to be like a night out at the cabin, you know.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, John is telling me he wants to take a trip to Montana to do some fly fishing. And so we have a spot to go now.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes. Come on, John. Like, I don't care about the rules and flying and all that stuff now. Just be like that, you know, what was the cornerback's name that was sneaking in chicks?
Kemo Sivirint.
Yeah, that guy. Be like that guy. And just break the rules and come over here. Screw it.
Yeah, I'm sure you might just have to quarantine for a little bit on your way back. But
yeah, absolutely. Hey, and the other thing is, if he did come out, like, I've got a good buddy who's like the guide for all those Richie Riches down the.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he would be more than willing to take us down the river.
Okay, I'm in. I haven't done it either, so if you have that hookup,
oh for sure,
I'm in.
Be a good time.
Well, we've got our season planned. We've got our future off season plans planned, and any more plans we need to plan before we get on out of here?
Bonus show plan.
We do have a bonus show plan.
Yeah.
So if you are a member of the flock, or if you're not a member of the flock, look for that in the Seahawkers podcast app. And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.